are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Ron Woodbury, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. I'm your host, Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Raising a child is a difficult job at best, but parents who have children with emotional, behavioral, and are learning problems find they need help and often professional help. Here's where we talk with professionals who are devoting their lives to help those children and their families. The topic today should every parent can understand and relate to, staying sane while parenting teens. And my guest today is C. Lynn Williams. Now, C. Lynn is a mother. She's a parent coach, educator, and an author. She has two books published and a third one on the pipeline, just about ready to go to be published. The first one, Trying to Stay Sane Whilst Raising Your Teen, a Primer for Parents. And then the second one is The Pampered Prince, Moms Create a Great Relationship with Your Son. And the one that will be coming out very, very soon is called Raising Your Daughter Through the Joys, Tears, and Hormones. Okay, well, welcome, C. Lynn. Thank you for being here. Good to have you here.
Hi, how are you, Lon? Thank you for having me.
Oh, doing fine. I got a bit of a frog in the throat. Hopefully I got it controlled. Well, let's get right to it. What do you mean by staying sane while parenting teens?
What I mean by that is it's so easy, you know, as that wonderful child of yours that has morphed into a monster, you think, it's easy to lose your temper and to just say all manners of things that, you know, later you will regret. And so I just offer some surefire tips for parents so that you don't lose your temper. You know, I have a section in the book where I talk about taking time out for you, where you actually, you know, I just need a few minutes. You go in your room, and I don't know if that means meditate for yourself, say a prayer, or just cool down, counting back from, you know, 10 to 1. But you just have to have, teenagers will listen to you, but they turn you off very easily when you lose your temper.
Yeah, that's all the latest that I've been reading on that, is that shouting, punishing generally backfires or turns them off, and they tune you out. And so losing your temper is probably the worst thing you can do, but it's so human, and particularly if you don't take care of yourself. How important is it to take care of yourself? Let's talk about that, because I think that's what you're getting at with meditating or time out or things like that.
Oh, it really is important, because by the time you have teens, depending on what's going on in your life, you might have a really high-powered job, you might be going through midlife crisis yourself, or maybe a divorce, any kind of life change that you're not taking care of yourself. Maybe you're eating a lot of fast foods, you're not exercising as much, because let's face it, we're in a fast-paced society right nowadays, and so, you know, who gets taken care of the least? It will be generally the parent. And what I suggest is just institute a few things. For example, dinner together would be a great idea. Dinner together with your family, with your kids, that means you eat healthy meals, they eat healthy meals, you get a chance to talk to each other.
Okay, let's talk some more about this taking care of yourself. I think what you're saying is one of the best things you can do for your kids, to help your kids, is to take care of yourself early on in the process rather than sacrificing your own sanity for their perceived needs.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's really funny because at this stage in our lives, you know, once our children are teenagers, we forget that some of the basic things that we needed, you know, when we were young, rest, for example. I can get off on 5 hours of sleep. No, you really can't. You need those, you know, 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night. Or things like exercise, you know, maybe you put on an additional amount of pounds. We won't say how many, but you've put on some weight, but you're not walking, you're not bicycling, you're not doing anything that gives you a release to help with the temperament, to help with the, you know, bursts of anger. And so it's really important to take time for yourself.
Okay, well, You talk about in your book, and you talk about some of the things that, how do you do that, and some of the suggestions. Well, what are some universal tips that apply to parenting, and this was all kids. We'll get into specifically for boys, girls, and others, but in general, generic, what are some universal tips that apply to parenting all kids?
I think one of the things that's really important is consistency. Nowadays, you know, depending on what's going on in the country or society, you know, society decides whether or not you are a good parent based on whatever is the order of the day. But you have to be consistent when you're raising children of any age, and especially teenagers, because at this point, when they are right on the brink of adulthood, they still need, you know, they may look like they can operate on their own, and a lot of parents make the mistake of allowing them to, you know, that flexibility. They really need that wall of, you know, something with structure. So you got to be consistent. If you tell them, if you do this, these are the consequences, then you need to have the consequences available. And a lot of times, like I say, parents are not doing that. So that's one thing that's very important, is consistency in the rules and guidelines. I just think the other thing is that you have to remain the parent. It is very important that you not become friends. You know, everybody wants to be a friend with that teenager, but that they require you to be the parent. It's very important to be the parent.
Well, that's an important part of consistency. I think one thing in there, and I see parents get into that particularly when they get frustrated or angry, is idle threats. If you don't do that, you're going to be grounded for a month, or something that's impractical, or grounded for the rest of your life, or whatever the reaction is. If you say it, you mean it. And I think that's part of what you mean by consistency.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot. One of the things that I talk about in my Trying to Stay Sane book is how important it is to, if you put your child on time out, if that teen broke the rules, they can't go out for the weekend, guess what? You're on timeout with them, because how are you going to go out for the weekend and your child is supposed to be at home? You know, a lot of times it's do as I say, not as I do. I disagree with that entirely. I think that whatever you set up for the guidelines, you also have to show that same behavior to your young person. That's where the respect is built.
That makes a lot of sense. You have to live under the same rules that you put the kid under, and that's something because being an adult, you have more privileges than a child has, but it's hard for them to see it. Another thing that you mentioned there is you have to remain and remember that you're the parent. One of the things that's very, very common is that seems to be happening is parents are trying to be the buddy to their kid and do things with them, and sometimes it gets to the point to where middle-aged mothers are trying to dress in teen styles. But there's a lot of other ways. Could you talk a little bit about how dangerous it is to be a friend, and what does it mean to be a parent?
Oh, it's really dangerous. When my daughter started high school, I had gone through a divorce and moved my suburban children to the city. And there were a lot of challenges with that. One was, of course, she hated me because I had moved away from her friends. But the other thing was that we had to deal with an urban life. And an urban life is very different from a suburban life. And so, you know, you've got a lot of other factors that are being brought into it. Well, for example, in our household, before you could go out to somebody's house, I had to meet the parents. Her father had to meet the parents. Well, not everybody felt that same way. You could easily sleep over. The parent could not be at home. You might have parents who allow their children to drink with them. None of that is acceptable behavior. Drinking with your kids, alcohol, first of all, alcohol is, you know, it's illegal. So you're not supposed to be serving it to children. And they're children until they're grown. So, I mean, there's just some standards that you want to uphold. You know, you don't go out to the club with your child, and your child is a teenager. That's just, I mean, you're asking for trouble, because when you want them to respect you, they're not going to respect you, because you're really their friend. Which is it? Are you raising them, or are you friends with them?
Yeah, well, and that doesn't preclude maybe going out on shopping trips or doing fun things together, but that's, you could be a parent and things like that.
Oh, absolutely. And I do encourage that. Even if you have a set of twins that are teens or preteens, you know, I think that you need to have a relationship with each one of those children. And so a shopping trip is awesome. You know, if you're showing a child how to drive and you may have lunch afterwards or anything, you want to play basketball together or soccer, all of those things are fine. Mine is when you start to go over the line of what's acceptable behavior and what's legal. And, you know, I maintain that you can have, I remember one year, my daughter was still a teenager, and rather than going out for New Year's Eve, I said, why don't we have a family party? The family party was she could invite her friends and their parents, and we would all get together. We'd play music and eat food and play games. It was a wonderful New Year's Eve. Everybody was safe. I didn't have to worry about picking her up from someplace or any kind of, you know, festivities that ended in tragedy. It was a fun time for everybody.
Oh, that sounds good. Another thing you touched on there, and could you explain a little bit more? The individual relationships. It's important to have an individual relationship or exclusive time for each kid at various times. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I am. So, for example, you might have, maybe you have a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old. And maybe they're both boys, and you think, well, if I do something with them both, that's kill two birds with one stone. And I think there's a misnomer there. What you want to do is you want to have a separate relationship with each child because they're different. They're different children. And, you know, my thought is, okay, so maybe one child loves the opera. I know it sounds weird, but, you know, that's possible. So maybe one child enjoys opera, so you have tickets to the opera. And the other one enjoys, you know, football games. And so you have a relationship so that when they need to talk, they're able to talk. They know that they can come to you. I think nowadays there's so much going on that if your child runs into a difficult situation, don't you want them to talk to you? You don't want them to talk to whoever's available, good or bad. And so I think the way to foster that kind of open discussion is to, once, like I say, have dinner together where you have open forum. In our household, there was no conversation that was off limits. The only ground rule was respect. So you couldn't sit at the table and curse us out, but there was nothing that we didn't think was, you know, taboo to talk about. And I think that way, your kid is more relaxed, your child is more relaxed with you. Doesn't mean that you're not going to have some tough times and tough conversations, but they know that they can talk to you pretty much about anything. And more than likely, they will.
You mentioned something in there, too, you know, talking down on a meal together. And that's one of the things I keep hearing about, the importance of having the whole family together at meals on a fairly regular basis, as regular as you can.
Absolutely. The thing about the meals together is that there's so much that happens when you eat. You know, there have been studies on it. It's the more relaxed atmosphere generally. You know, you get a chance to, you know, I love to eat. I don't know about you. And so do my children. And so a lot of discussions can happen. You know, you can talk about what happened at school. You know, tell me how the test went, or, you know, maybe the bullying situation will come out. Maybe you'll have less issues with your child and self-esteem when, you know, you not only are you having conversation at dinner, but I also believe that parents should be honest with their kids. And so I'm going to go into an area that may be a little more controversial, but I believe if you've had some issues throughout your childhood, that we don't have the issues in a vacuum. You know, there's something that you discuss with your children later on if you have to. So, for example, let's say, for example, that you want to impress upon your kid to not have sex before marriage. Well, it's not enough to say don't have sex before marriage because God doesn't want you to. That's one thing you can say. But the other
wouldn't
thing
fly, that wouldn't say, fly very far with most kids.
Right. How long is that going to last, right? What you can say, though, is that you might, if it happened to you and you said, you know, I had a friend, if this happened, I had a friend in high school who got pregnant. She had to drop out of school and get a job. Her life changed dramatically as a result of that. Or maybe it happened to you. You know, and so I think a lot of times parents think they have to be perfect. You don't. But I think that it's okay to admit your mistakes if you can show how you grew from them and you're only sharing it so that they will not make the same mistakes, hopefully.
Yeah, the one issue I've heard on that is the use of pot. And a lot of parents, they're afraid to admit that they smoked pot when they were a kid because it might encourage their own children to do it. But I think that sort of backfires. Being honest, I smoked pot, but I regret it, or something like that would be much more healthy, right?
I think it is. I think that I'm the parent that always talked. You know, I shared information because I thought it was helpful. Now, at the time, my spouse didn't agree with that. I think you're telling the kids too much. And so that's something that you have to work out as a married couple. But I think the kid benefits, your child benefits when you're honest, because what happens is if their family secrets, let's say, for example, your child is adopted, you don't want to tell them. They find out maybe they have to have surgery in their, you know, late teens, early 20s. Now they find out they're adopted. Are you serious? Or, you know, something else life-changing. There are all kinds of things that I think can be handled in the course of a discussion. You might wait until they're age appropriate, but it's something worth talking about.
Absolutely, and I think one thing to keep in mind here is the whole thing of secrets, because I found in working with struggling teens and in a residential placement, most of them have some family secrets that will really make it very difficult for the kid to heal. These are kids that are really getting crossways with life, or the parents might have some secrets, or the kid. Secrets are very, very bad. Now, that doesn't say you tell them everything, just blah. But holding on to a secret because you're ashamed or something like that seems to get in the way of healthy growing up. You agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Matter of fact, in the news book, I have a chapter where I talk about, you know, sharing secrets. I mean, how do you have a daughter and, you know, there's been a history in your family of, you know, out of wedlock pregnancies, and you just tell her you don't want her to have sex? How about telling her what's actually been happening? Or even a different story. Maybe, you know, maybe somebody, we had all kinds of skeletons in our family, and so, you know, but you figure out a way to talk about it, because it shouldn't be something that comes up when it will come up when you least expect it and when it's most harmful, like you said. And what happens then is all of the trust that you thought was built up is gone in that moment, because you didn't feel you could share something that would be beneficial to your teen.
Okay, well, let's go on to another subject to sort of break it down a little bit. We've been talking about applies to all kids, parenting all kids, you know, consistency and remain the parent and meal together, things like that. How about breaking it down to gender, or, you know, is parenting a teen girl different than parenting a teen boy? How about a tween? How about a special needs kids, or even a young adult? Because just because they turn 18 doesn't mean they're not still a kid. So could you talk about how might be some differences in parenting each one in each category?
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I know it's a long topic, but we have quite a bit of time yet.
Well, but it's a great topic, Lon, because, yes, there are differences between the male and the female in your child, and they could be very close in age. Boys process differently than girls, and my daughter loves to talk, and so we always knew when she stopped talking, there was a problem. My son is just the opposite. He doesn't talk a lot. So if he started talking too much or, you know, some other odd things, then we knew, okay, there's something else going on here. I parented them differently. If I needed to talk to my son, he loves ice cream. And so we'd go, let's go get some ice cream. When I taught high school boys, I didn't give them direct eye contact. I would just look like I wasn't paying much attention, and of course I'd be paying full attention because I could repeat back to them exactly what they were saying, but it doesn't put them so much on the spot. Women tend to like to talk their problems out. I do it all the time with my husband, and yet the boys tune you out. So you've got to capture their attention with as few words as possible and listen. And it works. It really does work. So you can't say, you can't continue.
And for boys, you mentioned doing something with them, like going for ice cream, is the important part of that.
Right. Right. I mean, if you, like, the other thing that the, and he happens to be the youngest, so he loves alternative music. So what he'll do to get my attention is he'll bring his iPod on the, along the ride to get the ice cream, and he'll say, Mom, I want you to hear a new song. Now, usually what that means is we're going to have a really good conversation because I'm going to talk to him, you know, he's going to tell me about who the artist is, and we're going to listen to that song, maybe another one, and then we're going to get into some conversation. It has always happened. I didn't recognize it right away. All I knew is if I wasn't available to him, he may start acting out in other kind of ways. So I usually tried to pay attention. Again, my daughter was very different. But she still wanted her time. So for us, you know, I would go, we'd go and get hair done, nails done. We might go for a walk. She'll work out with me. But I got to pay close attention because she's got a lot to tell me. So you find out what their love language is. And they all have a love language. Son likes to be, his love language are words. He loves words. And so I stroke him with words. My daughter, on the other hand, likes attention and a different way. And so you find out what that is and you offer it.
Could you explain a little bit more what you mean in general by love language?
Okay, so love language, I think that's Gary, and I can't recall his last name, of course, but he talks about the ways that you, your people around you that live with you, family members, husband, wife, the way that they show love. You can show love either through attention. You can physically give things. You can do special gifts, you know. So there are different ways to show love. And there's different ways to show love language. So if you know that your child, and you started when they were young, you gave them a lot of praise, and they grew up, they were showered with it, they excelled beyond your wildest dreams, and then they become a teenager and you cut it off, well, now they feel, you know, what did I do wrong? Well, you're thinking they're a teenager, they don't want you to shower them anymore with, you know, love and attention. Of course they do. They're just, you just may have to show it a little differently. So
okay.
Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, and I had a thought that takes off a little bit of an tangent. I mean, you mentioned praise. There's the self-esteem movement that's been very common for a long time, which says you should always praise them and never tell them no because it hurts your psyche. Would you like to address that a little bit?
I don't believe in that entirely. What I do believe, I think you need to be honest, but the I think the era of brutally frank and brutal honesty, it's gone by the wayside. You know, we're dealing with a different type of child now. They're a millennial kid, and so what's in it for them? You know, everything that you're, you know, they feel entitled to things, and I'm not saying that you praise them because they feel entitled, but again, you need to know how to motivate that particular child of yours. And once you figure out what that is, you know, again, so not you're not praising just because it's you think you need to tell them all the good things and none of the bad. You figure out how to say it. So if they haven't cleaned their room, then you don't say, well, I like that you got good grades, and you don't address the room issue. You know, room is part of their responsibility, and so you have a conversation. What you don't do is lose your temper because you've asked them 10 times to clean that room. So, you know, and this is what I found out with my son. If I told him that he had consequences and I didn't administer those consequences, he would remind me, Mom, you said you were going to put me on punishment if I didn't clean my room.
They love consistency. They love consistency. They might say they don't, but they love consistency.
They do. They look for it. They look for it. I remember one time my daughter, I was talking to her about something, and she didn't like it. And inside, I felt I was crumbling. I felt really like, oh, God, this is the worst job as a parent. And I later heard her that day talking on the phone to one of her friends, and if she wasn't saying verbatim what I had said to her, and she was telling them, like, this is what you have to do because my mom said so and so. So what I was thought was terrible parenting was actually exactly what she needed because she was turning around and giving that same, you know, mantra to her friends. So you just don't know. You have to do what you think you should do in a consistent basis over and over. and you need to have people like you that are surrounding your children, because, you know, I will tell you that there seems to be an epidemic. No matter how much of a parent, a great parent you are, they still have peer pressure. And the peer pressure sometimes will override what the parents think, unless you have a really excellent relationship and a good foundation of, you know, godly principles, you know, then it's still a crapshoot.
let's take that in another category. How about tweens, a little bit younger? How would you define a tween, and tween or preteens or what have you, and how would the parenting be different with a tween than it is with a teenager?
Well, okay, so the tween is usually around, they're older than 10, but they're younger than about 14. So that's a small age. You know, it depends on where they're growing up to determine whether or not it starts at 10 and it's over at 14, or if it's actually that smaller age category that I just mentioned. But this is the age where there's still some hormonal factor going on. So one day they are absolutely just the apple of your eye. You love them dearly. They can do no wrong. They don't usually do, you know, they want to please you. That's the age. They still kind of want to please you. And yet in the next second, you're not that cool anymore.
Coming a teenager.
Get out of favor with you. They haven't turned completely to a teen, but they're going back and forth a little more often.
Yeah, I taught middle school or junior high one year, and they were, I could see a lot of that's back and forth. We were sweet one day, and devils are obstinate the next day on that. And, well, it sounds like it also is about the age of puberty hitting.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's definitely the age of puberty, and, you know, there are a lot of, like I said, there are a lot of influences. So if you have the little girl groups, or I call them the little girl gangs, where they're nice, nasty, you know, you can be part of our group if you're mean like we are, and, you know, that, and we don't like but a small group of people, and you have to act just like us. And, you know, the peer pressure, I think, for girls is even higher than it is for boys, because we want to belong. You know, we're used to belonging, whereas boys have clubs like sports. You know, it's well known, and the ground rules are very open and well understood. I think with the girl groups, it's a lot different. It's a little more closeted, and, you know, you can say, what are you doing? And they'll say, oh, we're not doing anything. And they look nice and innocent, but there's all kinds of mayhem going on underneath.
So. Well, I raised three daughters. I had four kids. We had four teenagers in the house at one time, and I managed to survive it.
Bless you.
I had three daughters, and I saw a lot of that, the drama and the innocent smiles and stuff like that. And and I fully agree with you when you're saying it's different between the boys and the girls on that. Well, we have to take a bit of a break. And for about a minute, this is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. We're talking with C. Lynn Williams, author, mother, parent coach, and an educator. And we'll be back in about 1 minute talking about staying sane while parenting teens. Raising children is a tough job. The job is even harder due to all the distractions, temptations, and dangers facing teens and their parents in our modern age. Some of these children are especially challenging and make such poor decisions as teens that their parents fear for their child's safety and future. I'm Lon Woodbury, and as an independent educational consultant, in my 22 years of practice as Woodbury Reports, we have worked to help hundreds of parents individually throughout the country who fear for their child's future. We also have an extensive website, strugglingteens.com, that provides as much objective information as we can to help parents. And we produce an LA Talk radio show interviewing leading professionals who are helping parents right after Answers for the Family. If you have a child whose decisions make their future in doubt, and you are looking for help, you can call me at 208-267-5550, and I'll be glad to try to help you. Or check my website, strugglingteens.com. Well, welcome back. This is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. And we're talking with C. Lynn Williams, author and mother and educator and parent coach. Sounds like you're pretty busy there. But the topic is staying sane while parenting teens. She's talking about things that are in her books and drawing a lot on her personal experiences raising some kids. So, C. Lynn, let's go on to the next topic I have here. When should a parent look for help? And that's either professional help or parent support. Because sometimes things get out of hand and it's just normal, but other times it's out of hand very serious. So when should they look for professional help?
You know, that's a really serious question. I agree with you, Lon. I was writing a blog last week about suicide, and I actually had a brother who committed suicide. He wasn't a teenager, though. But I think when you are noticing a drastic change in behavior of your child, whatever that is, good or bad.
Yeah, and the key thing is drastic.
Drastic. So that means that if you have a child that's quiet and all of a sudden now they are very loud and wearing flashy clothes, they have mood swings, or maybe they have fits of temper, you know, they're showing a lot of anger, any of those kinds of things. Or maybe they're just the opposite. Maybe they were normally nice, you know, effervescent kind of kid, and all of a sudden now they're morose, they're depressed, you know, they are gaining weight, or you need to seek help. And you may start with your school, the school psychologist or the school counselor, and place a call, go up to the school. You know, I think of nowadays parents are so, they're not really sure exactly what to do. Start with the school psychologist and make an appointment and say, you know, I'm concerned about my son, I'm concerned about my daughter. If you don't have a school psychologist or a school counselor, call your family physician and make an appointment. A lot of the insurances now have programs that allow you to seek to have a mental health professional for your child. You know, you never really know what's going on. I mean, I think a lot of times, and that's why you want to have some kind of meal every single day, because if you're busy and your child is busy, how do you ever touch base and find out what that barometer is so that you know that there's been a change? So, you know, like I said, if there's a change in behavior, whatever that is, you need to start with a conversation with your son or daughter. That's always helpful. You know, how's everything going? You seem, and you just address it as, you address it without anger. You address it without a lot of emotion, because I think with teenagers, you know, if you get excited, they're already excited. You're not going to have a good conversation, but you can ask them, you know, I noticed lately your behavior has changed, or you seem to be sleepier, or, you know, just talk, you know, what's going on. And if they don't want to talk to you, you don't know what you're talking about, mom or dad, then that's when I would seek outside help immediately.
Yeah, I think one of the things I tell parents is if you get a gut feeling that things are going terribly wrong, that might be the best thing to listen to. Because sometimes the kid, I talk with parents that things are going on. That's obviously very harmful. But they will wonder, is that just part of normal teenage frustration with a teenage kid? And so that's one thing to do in that. Now, I work primarily as an educational consultant on the sort of the tail end of it, the last ditch, Dan, where kids have gone to programs that didn't work. They've been through therapy. They've been through counseling. And finally, they need some sort of residential placement. And that's not necessarily just sick kids. These kids can be extremely entitled or extremely upset or low self-confidence or any number of things. But that's where I work. But most of the time, some sort of local intervention from a professional makes a lot of sense. Maybe get to a therapist too. Therapist or even some sort of evening program or perhaps a school that has a little bit of emotional growth involved in it, I would think would be part of that. It's awfully hard for the parents. So anything you could talk about is how, you know, what would you say about if a parent that has something that seems to be chronic? How would you advise the parent to handle it?
Well, chronic like an illness?
No, chronic like continued. Continued sneaking out at
night. It just continues?
It just continues. You work with it, you have consequences at home, and nothing works.
Okay, so, you know, I'm the firm believer that the military, that a boot camp, you know, I offer a boot camp of weekend for parents, but if you actually have a child that's not listening to you at all, they are still sneaking out at night, they're, you know, smoking or getting, you know, doing drugs, then you've talked about the consequences, you instituted consequences that continue, then you need to look for, you know, those, like you said, those locations that offer intensive behavior modification. Is that a nice way to say it? And,
yeah.
You know, and you just say, you know, if you're going to live under my household, then you have to follow my rules. If you're not going to live under my household and follow my rules, then you have to, you know, we have to take measures. And if they're underage, you're still responsible. If they're under 17, you're still responsible. And so, you know, there are facilities that will handle your child. Hopefully it's not a treatment home where they have to live away indefinitely. But I think a lot of times, you know, part of being a teenager is pressing the limits. And for parents, you've got to not lose your mind when that happens. They are going to test you. They are going to test you. I can remember one time specifically, I never had to do a treatment home, but I have had to put my son out, the youngest. And I remember my daughter had a good girlfriend, and they left the house one evening, and she knows what time curfew is. She didn't come back in. I locked the door, and I double-locked it. Of course, I was up every few minutes checking to see if she was trying to come in, and she didn't, and I was beside myself with worry. Well, what had happened was her best friend's mother had cancer, and the mother had died. But, of course, they didn't tell me. And so they were consoling each other in her car down at, you know, we lived in a condo then. So, but I didn't know anything. And all I said to her later, I felt like a heel because I locked her out of the house. But, you know, part of that is communication. She said, well, Mom, you overreacted. I didn't think I overreacted because you didn't communicate with me. So it's a conversation. But from, you know, what you're talking about, there are some hard measures that have to take place. I know parents who have had to, you know, take their child to a boot camp or enroll them in the army or, you know, something to that effect. And usually when you take those kinds of drastic measures, the kids that come back thank you. You know, they don't like it at the time, they hate you, but they come back and they are different people.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the terminology I use, wilderness therapy and therapeutic boarding schools, boot camps are almost always public and punishment oriented, and I haven't seen that they work as well. You mentioned boot camp. I think a lot of people sort of equate them. Wilderness therapy is entirely different. It's consequences but no punishment, and sometimes the kids need they go so far as that. Well, another thing that you mentioned, the material you sent me, is about parent support. How can the parents get together and help each other?
Well, I think they can. Well, I'd like to see us move away from, you know, when I was growing up, everybody on the block that was an adult could address you and, you know, say, you know, you need to not do that, Kathy, or, you know.
Yeah, the good old days.
Nowadays, right. Nowadays, if you say something to a parent, you know, to a child, the parent may come to your door and say, you can't speak to my child at all. And I think we need to move away from there. I think you need to, it's really important, you know, we have, It takes more than just one or two parents to raise your kids. You've got, you know, hopefully grandparents and aunts and uncles, but good friends. Part of that could be your child's teacher, having a relationship with the teacher so that when things are going on at school, you hear about it. And it's not just in front of the principal. You get a phone call or a text message or, you know, a note home. And that information that, you know, you get a chance to partner with the teacher, the neighbors. You know, I would tell my neighbors, if you see my kids doing anything, please feel free to let me know. Here's my number at work. Here's my cell phone number.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I think it's more what you're describing, that falling away from that is more an urban. I live in a very rural area in North Idaho, and my oldest daughter was extremely frustrated because she would do something, and her mother would know about it before she even got home.
Exactly.
Before she got home, she'd come home, and her mother would tell her, oh, I heard that you, thus and so, whatever it was. And it really frustrated her and made her feel like, it kept her from doing a lot of things.
It did.
And then And then it might be a little controversial. Well, let me share you. I've got three daughters. I heard something, decided, okay, dating becomes an issue. About the tweens, you know, in high school. And so I told them, well, fine, you have my permission so long as the guy comes and asks me. And exactly. two of my three daughters, their reaction was, I don't want to bother. And that saved us a lot of problems in the high school areas.
You know what? I just wanted to just step in before you say that whole idea of dating. You know, first of all, I don't think you should be able to date at, you know, 12, 13, and 14. No way. Now, you may have a group of you that go somewhere, but then the parents should know everybody. All the parents should know each other. But I think the other thing that you mentioned, the guy has to come and say something to the dad. You know, if there's no dad in the house, certainly to the mom, you come and pick her up. You ask permission, you know, there's no company when you're not at home. I mean, all of those things have to be instituted regularly.
And what my daughters would do, one of the things would say, well, so-and-so is gonna ask if you can take me out. I really don't want to. So would you tell him no? Okay, I'd be glad to play along with that. So the girls used it too, and it was a little bit frustrating, but it kept from getting it's kept them in the group things all the way through high school, actually, pretty much. And I instituted as a freshman, and then eased off in the junior senior year as it got older. But that helped. That was just saying dad's watching, and it was also saying dad cares. I think that's an important message in that. Well, now the thing
that message is awesome. That's a message that I think for girls, a lot of the girls are not necessarily getting nowadays, and so they're reaching out in all the wrong places for people to, you know, help them know that I love you.
Mm-hmm. And I care about you, yeah. Well, there's one other thing that we haven't talked about that's sort of a preventive that you had mentioned in some of the material you sent me, but how important is extracurricular activities for teens, or even tweens?
Oh, my gosh. It's so important that, you know, that I hope all parents think about it. So, yes, you're busy. Maybe you're working, you know, a high-powered job, but your kid needs to be, whatever their skill is, whether it's the chess club, whether it's the soccer, whether it's cheerleading, football, you know, maybe a couple of those, some music, you know, they need to be kept busy. Their little minds are so active, and there's so much time between when they get out of school and when you're home from work. And so wouldn't you like them to be in a structured program, even if it's going to the Y after school and taking swimming? I mean, it doesn't almost matter as long as it's a supervised program and your child is part of it. Now, here's the added benefit. They're taking these lessons. They're in these clubs. There's camaraderie with it, and they want to please the coach. Well, in order to please the coach, the grades have to be in order. You'd be surprised how many grades came off of marginal to exceptional when you wanted to stay on the chess team or when you wanted to stay on the soccer team. So I think there's lots of, and then, of course, they're healthier because they're not sitting on the couch and becoming couch potatoes. Added benefit.
And that's a good way to explore interests. Because that's really one of the main things they should do at that age is exploring interests. Who am I? What do I want to do when I grow up? Yada, yada, yada. And extracurricular activities is a way to test out all those things.
Absolutely.
Plus keeping them busy and keeping the, what is it, the old saying, idle hands is the devil's work or something like that. It keeps them busy and lowers temptation to get into doing the wrong things.
Oh, it is. Because, you know, again, they are hormonal, and if you think about it, you have too much time on your hands, you get into devilment, as my mom used to call it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one other question. We have about 5 minutes left, and I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about your books and how to learn about them or order them if anybody's interested. But is there such a thing as a bad teen, as a bad kid?
I don't really think so. I think that there are bad circumstances. I think when you find a teen that's hard to reach, that appears to be unredeemable, you have to look back on the circumstances. You know, they had to survive. Maybe they had parents who were on drugs or, you know, absent parents. Or, you know, maybe they had to do a lot of things on their own, and so they are improvising. And when you have to improvise at such a young age, you make bad choices. You have no way to do any different. You haven't learned yet. And so I think that before we put the label of bad teen, you really have to look at what all has had to happen. Now, are there some teens who have wonderful parents, home life, and are still considered bad? I'm sure there are. I haven't run into those yet, because usually when I'm looking at them, when I saw them in high school, there was something going on. You know, everything looks good on paper, but behind the scenes, maybe the dad is an alcoholic or the mother is. You know, and there was always something, there was always a good reason for why the kid acted the way he or she did. So I really honestly don't believe in that.
Well, I agree with you in general. Most of the kids I've seen have some sort of situations, and they're understandable. But I have seen some kids that, and then working in my area, which is sort of last stop for the kids, I have seen some kids that caring families, multiple treatment programs, all kinds of things, and nothing stuck, and to where the parents are even fearful of their child because it threatened to kill him a few times. And So I would say there's a few exceptions, but for the most part, I agree with Father Flanagan at Boys Town. never seen a bad kid, which is basically what you're saying. There just seems to be some that are bad seed, but they're very, very few. And most of the kids that are seem to be intransigent, well, you're right. Something was going on. They took it wrong. And even though a lot of kids come through very bad situations and turn out fine on their own, a lot of resilience, there are occasionally some that just nothing can get through to. They're either so damaged or maybe something congenital on that. Okay, we have about 3 more minutes. As I mentioned when we started, we're talking with Celine Williams, author, and 3 books about, first one, Trying to Stay Sane While Raising Your Teens. Could you tell a little bit more about your books, how somebody could find out more about them, and contact information for you if somebody wants to call and talk to you?
So, yes, thank you. So, the 3 books are designed, they're a series of small, easy-to-read books for parents to help take the edge off, or to, as I say, stay sane. The first book, Trying to Stay Sane While Raising Your Teen, as well as The Pampered Prince, are designed for parents of teenagers or that in-between age. The Pampered Prince is really designed for mother-son relationships through any age. I've talked with women who had 30 and 40-year-old sons where the relationship needed some additional help, and the book was able to offer some tips that they could use. Both of these books are available on Amazon.com, and they also, you can contact me at my website, www.clynwilliams.com. The final book, Raising Your Daughter Through the Joys, Tears, and Hormones, will be available in a couple of weeks. And so right now I have a pre-sale going on. And if you type in the title and put pre-sale, then you can pre-order the book. And once it's available on Amazon, then it will come out and it will be sent to you directly.
Okay. And do you, is there a phone number or anything? I see one of your... CGWW Books. So what, you publish, self-publish yourself?
No, actually, my publisher for the first 2 books is a publisher called St. Paul Press. And my email address is CG, like you said, WW Books with an S at yahoo.com. I'm also available on Twitter at CGWW Book with no S. I'm on Facebook with CGWW Books. So I'm available to talk with people through social media, as well as, like I said, my website. Phone number, if you want to reach me, is 224-357-6315. And I'm available to talk individually, which
is
I love
your,
to do.
Is that,
well
your home, is that your home phone or your cell phone?
That's the way to reach me, the business phone, yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, I thank you very much. I've ran out of questions and we've ran out of time. This is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices for Struggling Teens, and we've been talking with Celine Williams, author, mother extraordinaire, sounds like, and parent coach, and we've been talking about staying sane while parenting teens, and I've learned a lot, and I hope the listeners have learned a lot too. I'll be sure to come back
next week.
Yeah, thank you. And next week we're going to talk about what's a real intervention.
Thanks again.
Okay.
For having me.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, only on LA Talk Radio.